Welcome everyone to the 2E Homeschooling Podcast. In today's episode, we are going to explore gifted boys with Asperger's. My six-year-old son's second E is autism, and I wanted to explore that a little bit today. I do want to preface that I do not view autism negatively, but there are many struggles that we face, and ours might be more or less than someone else's, and that's okay. We're all different, and our kiddos are all different. I view autism as simply another neurodiversity type that I, as a parent, am trying to figure out all the time. I feel like it constantly changes. And I also wanted to bring up that for the purpose of this podcast, I will be using Asperger's and autism interchangeably. And I do realize that the term Asperger's isn't officially used anymore, but it is commonly used, and some of you may use this term yourself. It is always my personal go-to term, and it isn't a way to somehow ignore that my child has autism, or to make it sound nicer, or to somehow be in denial of it. I just, you know, came across this interesting thread where some parents of autistic kids refuse to use the name Asperger's. They find it a hateful word, as Dr. Asperger's was apparently associated with the Nazi Party. I really had no clue about this. And, you know, some parents are okay with using a term because even if they may know this information, they don't want to forget his scientific knowledge he was known for. You know, I'm personally on the fence and I haven't researched it in depth enough to know which I agree with necessarily. And Asperger's is the common term that my son's doctors and OTs use and the one I'm most familiar with using. So for this podcast, you will hear both, because until I have gone down that rabbit hole and figured out which I'm most comfortable with after receiving that information, then, you know, this is the term that that we've been using. And so that is what we'll continue to use for now. The last thing I wanted to touch on is how people describe their autistic child. It seems like it always goes back and forth. Rather, you should use person-first language, such as my child with autism, versus identity-first language, such as my autistic child. I personally prefer my autistic child, although I do kind of, you know, find myself using the term my child with autism, but it's pretty rare. I typically say my autistic child because it is part of his identity, and it's nothing that we are ashamed of, and we embrace it. So when he's older, he can definitely make that choice for himself, but he is only barely six and isn't, I think, really aware that he has a diagnosis of autism per se. He just knows he's kind of different and quirky. So when using Asperger's, I use my child, has or my child with Asperger's, because it just doesn't make sense to say it any other way. But when I say autistic, it's just my autistic child. Hopefully that makes sense. I also find that many communities and organizations now that identity first is the current preferred way. This isn't 100% true, of course, because everyone is different and it does go back and forth. And like I said, it's always up to that autistic person. And you might find it in a generational sense, you know, maybe older people with autism that have always known they're autistic may choose person first, because that is what they grew up with and what was most appropriate at the time. You know, it really is just so different. And so, yeah, so it's up to the person, but when they're so young, you know, it's up to the family and you can't tell them they're right or wrong. It's just personal preference. That was kind of long intro, but I wanted to kind of get those formalities out of the way because I know everyone is different. Everyone has different opinions on the way that things are said, and they just have different ways of doing things. It is all okay. So as I said before, my six-year-old autistic son, he was not quite 5 and a half when we got his evaluation, 5 years, 5 months maybe. I saw evaluation about a year after I suspected he might be autistic by a developmental pediatrician that our normal ped referred us to. And, you know, I wanted to know if he was indeed autistic or if he was just quirky because of his giftedness. I felt all of this stuff was just such important information, especially as a homeschool parent, who, and as a, you know, I will say, I personally truly believe homeschool is such an amazing way to educate your child, and it is my preferred way, but I am not opposed to public school for different scenarios, for different kids. You know, everyone's different. I've always been a year-by-year kind of homeschooler. My oldest two, as I said in my last podcast, have dabbled in public school some. So, and it has its place, and it can be so amazing for families. So I do just want to put that out there that this is a homeschooling podcast, but, you know, I understand the value of public education, but because I do understand that value, you know, I really wanted to find out this information because, you know, how my kids are wired plays a huge part in how I educate them. So, yeah, so I knew he had sensory issues. He was diagnosed with sensory processing disorder when he was a tot. And I know that you can have sensory issues. I mean, people have sensory issues, generally speaking. And I know that it can accompany giftedness. I know it can accompany autism. You know, there's always that overlap. So I kind of wanted to look for, you know, into it further. So there were some things that tipped me off, and I just wanted to kind of dive into those. So some signs I saw were the sensory seeking needs. So he used to squeeze his sister's hand when she was a baby super hard. He had to have that squeeze. He was constantly running and crashing and twirling, and like he just had to have this constant sensory input. And you know, sensory issues are not new to us. I have my own, and but you know, his were kind of a little extreme when he was a toddler. So we that's why he originally started seeing OT. And so sensory seeking needs, that was the first clue. That was our first clue. Our second was intensities and activities and interests. Everyone gets, you know, super hyper like interested in these things, that, you know, ideas. Everyone's got hobbies that they love to do, but his were intense. He would pick a subject and he would live and breathe it almost obsessively. That is the only thing he would talk about. He couldn't just sit and have a conversation with you. He had to only be talking about his special interests. And they did change. I feel like he's had a different special interest each year until recently. He's been on a 2-year kick of animal facts. He could tell you anything about anything that has to do with it. His first special interest was the human body. Even as this young little dude, you know, he was, I want to say 3, and we got him the squishy body model, and he memorized where everything went. I didn't even know how to put this body together, and he could do it without looking at the diagram. He knew how to put everything, you know, apart and together. He's very good using the little tools, and he was just obsessed with it. He would read about the human body. He would ask questions about it. You know, he was very intense about it, and that was all that he talked about. So that was another one. Stemming, which I didn't even know what stemming was until I got more into our sensory journey. But he would rock when he's standing or sitting. He was constantly twirling, squeezing people or squeezing objects. He was always fiddling. And he likes to walk on his tiptoes. That is his preferred way. Or he likes to stomp on his tiptoes. And we have hardwood floors, so you can imagine the noise. And let's see, one other one. Oh, sucking his spit, especially when he gets anxious. It makes it, I don't know, he likes to like make this weird, I'm not gonna make it for you guys. It's honestly a little annoying, but it's his little stem. And you know, I feel like as long as they're not hurting anybody or himself, that, you know, these stems are a way to deal with some of these intensities and anxieties that they have. So it's best to let them do them. But it is good to also notice when they're doing them. So, so I just noticed these different stems. And so that was another little tip for us. the biggest one that probably had the biggest, oh my gosh, the grandest, I'm trying to think of the, like a huge word, right? It had such an impact on our family was emotional meltdowns. Now, all tantrums, if you guys ever listen to, I forget her name already because of my mom brain, Tilt Parenting. She talks about kids with all different kinds of exceptionalities, and it's a wonderful, wonderful podcast. She had made the a podcast about, is it a tantrum or a meltdown? How really they're just all stem from this emotional place. How, you know, they really are actually kind of related. And that really hit home with me because the emotional meltdowns, they were really tough to navigate. And, you know, a tantrum, like for me to tell the difference if he's just kind of throwing a fit, you know, no matter that it comes from the same kind of emotional place, you know, if he's throwing a fit about something, he really just wants his way, he will try to negotiate, will try to get his way. And if you were to give him this item or this thing or whatever it is that he wanted, he would be happy. But with emotional meltdowns, they may start as tantrums, they may start as whatever, but they get to a place where they have this switch that is just flipped and they can no longer come down from it. So he would get stuck in saying a phrase or saying a word or saying nothing at all. And he would just get stuck in a loop and he could not calm down. He'd be crying. He'd be throwing himself around. He would just be so overwhelmed with this emotion and just crying and screaming. And it was just heartbreaking and frustrating. And finally, we have our groove now. You know, his OTs have helped me navigate some of these things. And we have our complete, like, I know what to do. I know what he likes. And every kid's different. But this really took a toll on our family because we didn't really know what to do for him. And, you know, these emotional meltdowns, I mean, he's my third kid. You know, I have four. And, I mean, I've seen tantrums and meltdowns, and you know, I've worked in preschools, I've volunteered in schools, I've babysat, I've had kids, I mean, you know, and nieces, like, you know, I've had lots of experience with kids, and I've seen these meltdowns and I've seen tantrums, but these are so intense and so different. And his emotional regulation, or his inability to regulate his emotions, was a huge tip for us as well. Let's see, eye contact, unless he is very intentional about it or he knows you well, and even then it's not necessarily guaranteed, he doesn't maintain eye contact when conversing. You know, it can be many reasons. He's distracted by his environment, or what's usual is that he's really thinking about what he wants to say. His processing speed in conjunction to his verbal ability and spatial awareness and thinking and that sort of thing is like the differentiation between it, like that it's such a gap that he is slow to speak his words. He doesn't talk rapidly like I do, like I probably do in my podcast, and I try to slow myself down. It's so hard. So, you know, I'm such a rapid thinker and talker, but you know, for him, he kind of just hangs on every word and he really emphasizes everything. And so it's kind of interesting to watch him speak because he is kind of looking off to the side and really, you can tell he's like formulating these responses, right? So the eye contact is really hard for him sometimes. And then a couple of last ones where he misses social cues, or he overcompensates for them because he's trying to mask. And the best example I can give is a joke. So when someone tells a joke and everyone else is laughing, he has that delayed response. He's like, oh, it's supposed to be funny. Ah, you know, and he'll have this like grandiose laugh. Like he just overthinks this laugh and he's just, ah, you know, and really maybe it wasn't that funny. It was just kind of a chuckle. A chuckle response was appropriate. You know, or he just won't have a response at all. So, you know, and he loves jokes is the thing too. It's so funny. He has so many joke books and he loves to read them to me, or I will read them to him. And when I read them to him, he loves knock knock jokes, and I'll, you know, say a knock knock joke and, you know, get to the punchline, and he just kind of looks at me. He's like, that's funny. You know, that makes sense. It makes sense because of da da da. So that makes it funny. Like, he likes when they make sense, like the play on words are appropriate and he gets them, because when they make sense, they're funny to him, even if he's not laughing. So it's so hard to tell. But, you know, other little social cues like that, two people are talking, he doesn't understand, can just walk up to somebody and just start speaking to the person he wanted to talk to. Something we're working on. And so just little social cues that most people understand. If somebody doesn't want to hug you, you know, you're giving them a hug and you can feel their body kind of shifting, like, okay, hug's done. He doesn't quite get that. He's like, oh, I'll just hug you forever, and until they say, hey, you gotta stop. So he doesn't get those nonverbal cues. It's kind of hard for him. And then transitions. Oh my gosh, the transitions are super hard. And if he doesn't have enough or he has too many, they're really hard for him. Like if something, a transition is expected and it doesn't happen, then that can be hard for him. If plans fall through, that's really hard for him. If he's expecting something to happen in his day and it does not happen, the flexibility is not quite there. And that inability to be flexible and with small changes can really, really just toss their whole day. And so, you know, these were all the things collectively together made up my suspicion of him being autistic. And so that is why we got our evaluation. So these were the signs. And, you know, as far as homeschooling goes, I really wanted to find out if this was a possibility for diagnosis, because it really does, how your child is wired really does play a lot into, or it should play a lot into, how you teach your child. And if you're homeschooling, you know, everybody's got a learning type. They're kinesthetic, they're visual, you know, they're auditory learners perhaps, but you really kind of got to figure it out. And being autistic and gifted, really, I mean, those are two big neurodiverse types that are like mushed into one. You got to figure this out. So, you know, this child may be thirsty to learn all these complicated math things, and he, you know, his gifted and his autistic intensities is what is driving him to want to do nothing but math for hours every day for 2 months. But, you know, it also makes him drop it and say, nope, here's my new intensity. And you kind of got to go with the flow. It's what led us to be more unschoolers than official homeschoolers or school at homeers. because it doesn't work with a child who's autistic. Routines do work, but their routines work. So if they have a routine and they enjoy it and we're going with it and this is our routine, it's fabulous. But if they want to change their routine and you don't want them to, it can be so hard to get them to do what you want. So between the fact that I didn't think that he was going to be able to get the advanced differentiation that I know he needed in school, because I had tried it with my other two kids and I knew how hard it was, and he was just even more intense of a learner, plus the autism part of it, it just led us to, I don't feel there probably is ever going to come a time when he is going to go to public school. You know, maybe for my oldest that will be different, but for him that will be his answer. His answer is going to be homeschool the whole time, because he is so asynchronous that homeschooling for him and for us, and you know, I am lucky enough to be able to homeschool him, that is going to be his answer. I can allow him deep dives into anything that he wants and know he's going to be good to go. I can allow for different transitions. He can do his OT any time of the day. You know, we can pick that schedule that works best for our family. We have four kids, and let's see, two are in OT, two are in speech. One just graduated OT, but she's in competitive gymnastics. The other one is about to do college classes, and, you know, he does part-time stuff at, he'll be doing part-time stuff at the high school next fall. We have all these things that we need to do to accommodate the giftedness and the twice exceptionality that they have, that homeschooling is just a really nice choice. So maybe, you know, you guys out there listening, you're public schoolers, you're homeschoolers, you're hybrid, of whatever it is that you do, you know, this is what we do that works for us. So I don't know, maybe my experience will, you know, my information will kind of help guide you. That is why I'm doing this podcast, you know, kind of just talk about our experiences and maybe it will help you. So yeah. So that's kind of just the gist of it, that is our autistic boy, and that those are his struggles and his needs. And you know, once you understand those learning styles, you can really be able to accommodate your child. And if you are having to public school, then you can advocate for your child for what they need. If they have those sensory needs and they are very intense, you can make sure that, you know, certain things are put into their 504 or their IEP, and you can make sure that you're advocating so they have that best experience possible. You know, if you're homeschooling, and I'm just chuckling right now because I have this. So we had a homeschool room, and it has now become this big gym of sensory. We essentially have OT at our house. And with the whole COVID thing going on, it was actually beneficial because we did telehealth appointments up until recently. And it was really neat. We have a gymnastics bar. We've got a teeter totter, a couple of them, different ones. We have a bouncy horse unicorn thing. We've got a big trampoline outside. We have a little trampoline inside. We've got body socks. We've got jump ropes. What else? We got a cheese mat. We've got, I'm trying to think, we've got all the fidget things you can think of. Those little wobble balance things you put on your butt, under your butt when you sit, or under your feet. We've got TheraBands. We have got it all, except for a swing. We don't have a swing. I'm still trying to convince the other half that a swing is our next purchase. So we just have all these things that we've gradually collected. So, you know, I really should do like a little like audio tour of like how we use everything. But being able to accommodate your child throughout the day is a fabulous reason to homeschool. One last thought before I go is that has to do with the sensory. My daughter, when we brought her home from public school, she was sitting down 10 minutes to do school and playing for 10 minutes, sitting down for 10 minutes and playing for 10 minutes. So that is another thing that you can't necessarily do in public school. So, but now that I know what her sensory needs are, we can do that at home. So it's kind of a neat thing. And it's an interesting way to homeschool. It's pretty fun. So yeah, so I just wanted to, you know, this episode touch on what gifted with Asperger's looks like for a boy. And I do specify gender because with a girl, it is so completely different. And yeah, you can't really lump them in together. And not every boy is different. Some boys are present more like girls and vice versa. But, you know, this is what our boy edition is looking like. So I'm so happy you guys joined me. I'm going to put down a couple of books that I really enjoy. I will put down their title and author down below. One is like an everything guide to Asperger's. And the other one is a sensory guide. And it is amazing. It will tell you like every situation, if you're camping, you have a road trip, any of that kind of stuff. And it will give you all these different kinds of suggestions on things you can do to accommodate. And yeah, that will be probably another episode specifically, because sensory issues are a whole big can of worms, and they play into the autism factor. They really go hand in hand, and to the gifted aspect as well. It's just, they all are like these interlinking blocks, and if you've got them all figured out, then you know, it just, you learn to accommodate for everybody, especially if you have multiple kids that are autistic or multiple with sensory needs, because one kid may be very sensitive hearing and one needs to make all those noises, and it just gets a little nuts. But you can do it. It can be done. And yeah, so that will be another episode, maybe my next one. So anyway, thank you guys for sticking with me. I really appreciate it. I finally got all my cables in for my fancier speaker. So hopefully I'll get to stop doing this on my headphones and my phone, and I'll actually get to use a nicer one, so we won't have background noise. Yeah, so let's see. Google, where have I been on now? Anchor, Google Podcasts. I haven't seen a pop-up on iTunes yet. I'm going to have to work on that. Spotify, and oh, there's another one that I have never heard of before, but I saw it popped up. So you can find me in all those places. So yeah, so it's great to have you guys with me, and I will talk to you guys next week. Bye.